Here we go.
Everybody is just on their feet screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless. Gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to The Real Great One.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It is Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. On this week's show, in the first period, we discuss all the news from the past week in the NHL. It includes another scandal for the Blackhawks, Patrick Kane finding a new home, and another NHL coach getting sacked. Plus, we will tell you what went down on the ice this week, including Connor McDavid heating up. Second period, we will speak with lead play-by-play man for the NHL on TNT and the radio voice of the New York Rangers, the great Kenny Albert, will join us, talk about the Rangers and more. And in the third period, we'll read your emails, and that's all coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. But before we get into that, it's time for our traditional off-ice report, couple of minutes about what's going on with us, and I welcome in my co-host, Doug Stolhan. Hey, Doug, how are you?
Hello, Eddie Garcia. I am dandy.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I know you already had your Thanksgiving, but I had not had my Thanksgiving yet the recording of last week's show. All went well. Good time was had by all. We did have a couple of amusing mishaps. One, my wife was in charge of corn and cranberries. And so there was a slight miscommunication, and she bought four
cornberries.
She bought four bags of corn. It was supposed to require four cans of corn.
So
we got corn coming out our cornhole here at the Garcia house. We had to bring all the corn home with us, and so I'm now eating a big bowl of corn with every meal. And I'm okay with corn, but I don't like it that much. But
Luckily, it is not a pricey vegetable either.
Yeah, I was, thinking maybe put a bowl outside. Free corn for anybody.
It's
who
too
wants
bad
it.
Thanksgiving is not before Halloween. You could give out corn.
Yeah, but just a ladle of corn into the bag.
give them the whole bag.
We did have one pie mishap. There's always got to be something funny that happens. So cousin Dennis was having a slice of pumpkin pie. And I will say one thing probably didn't help the situation. They had plastic utensils, but they were like chrome colored. So they looked like, when I first saw them, I thought they were real, metal forks. I think that was part of the issue, but he was sitting in a chair, not at a table. He had the pie in his hand, and he went into, get a healthy slice of pumpkin pie, and he had a little too much force on the cutting there, and his fork snapped in half, and that pushing down, having a snap, he threw the pumpkin pie basically into his own lap, and he had a big old heaping helping of whipped cream on the top of it. And so this goes down, and everyone looks at him, and he just stands up with his hands out like, what the hell just happened? And he just stood there, and his wife's like, don't just stand there, do something, clean up after yourself. And he's like, what happened? What happened?
Did he think he broke a metal fork?
I think it definitely led to him thinking, even when you pick it up, it's obviously a lot lighter, but it just in your mind, I think it contributed to him.
How tough is this
force?
Hi, it just snapped a metal fork in half.
Yeah.
So when he stood up, did he dump the pie on the floor?
Yes. It went on the floor. And
were there dogs or cats present that were happy to indulge?
There was a dog present, but this is a very well-behaved dog. Our dogs would have, first of all, they wouldn't even have been they would have been running around wild and crazy. But no, their dog is unbelievably well-behaved, and he did not go after the pie.
Is it a stuffed dog?
No, it's a real dog. I know, it's weird. We have a neighbor's dog that she says he doesn't really, he's not all that interested in food. And I'm like, I've never known a dog that
well, wasn't. That's not true. It's just well-behaved.
Well, she said, like, she could leave a bowl of dog food out and he won't eat it all. Like, if I could put a bag of dog food open in our kitchen and either one of our dogs would eat themselves sick. They would just keep eating it.
Yep.
Like, this dog, she'll have the bowl full of food and he'll just graze on it occasionally. You know what I mean? So,
well, I mean, depends on how often she's feeding it, obviously, and whatnot. Like, Scout, when she was a puppy or young, I left the lid off of the container we keep the food in.
I remember you telling about this, yeah.
And she got in there and I came into the room and it was just, all I saw was a dog's ass coming out of the top of that thing. And she was face down, munching away. Hey, get out of there. But now I put her food down in front of her and she'll go get it when, you know, and within a minute she'll go over and start eating, but not immediately. She's like, Butkus literally salivated to while he was watching you scoop his food. He just could not wait. Yeah, and I can put, if Scout's up on the couch with me and I bring in some food and I put it over on the TV tray next to the couch, I can leave the room to go get a napkin or a drink and come back and she will not be eating it. So I mean, we've got her trained. She doesn't expect ever any human food.
Well, that's the thing. Our dogs are not very well behaved and we never give them people food. Never.
Well, but you got both of them as adult dogs.
True.
So you don't know what the previous owners were doing.
That's a fair point. That is a fair point.
Yeah. So because Butkus absolutely wanted some food from us. If it was cheese, he'd almost knock you over to get to it. I mean, that dog loves some cheese.
And those are some hefty dogs. They could, if they jump on you and you're not, you know, properly balanced, it's possible they could certainly knock you over.
Oh, yeah. Butkus was a good 60 plus pounds and with momentum. Yeah. And yeah, but he loved cheese, man. And if you got that out of the fridge, he'd come a running. So you had to be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that none of the mishaps were that serious, you know.
No, just the
cousin
music.
Dennis spills some pie on his lap.
No, and cousin Dennis had a different mishap. I think it was maybe a couple of Christmases ago. He was helping to unwrap or unpackage something. I can't remember what it was, and he had a knife, and he stabbed himself in the hand and had to go to the emergency room. So,
is Uncle Dennis or Cousin Dennis just crying for help? Is he looking for attention?
I don't think so. He does love attention, though. He's quite the character. But
hey, everyone, look at me! And then slices into his own hand.
Yeah, I saw him do it too, and he knew immediately. He just kind of like dropped the knife, grabbed his hand, and left.
Left?
He knew. He knew.
Went straight to the hospital.
Yeah, he knew. Yep.
Yeah. I was watching a show about a guy who he went to buy some glass and was told, if you act like you're a contractor or somebody in the know, they'll get you a better deal. If you act like a rube, they'll charge you full price and then some. This is in the UK. So he goes in there and he's trying to look slick, like, and there's some glass stacked vertically. And so he goes over and decides to kind of run his hand across the top of it, like, you know, to see how it is. Sliced his hand wide open and, but didn't want to give it away that he had done it. So he put it in his pocket, which then promptly filled with blood. So he, then he's like, oh, excuse me. He goes next door to a drugstore, buys a feminine napkin product or two, wraps that around his hand to soak up the blood, and then went back in there to complete the sale, was still charged full price. God.
Oh, that kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies there hearing you talking about it. Oh. Oh, what kind of glass is this? Oh.
Sharp.
Damn. Yeah. Goodness.
Yep. I love the ingenuity of it, though, you know, to go get the, I would have just gone straight to the hospital.
Yeah. That's,
go back and buy glass another day.
Yeah. It's, it clearly was not your time for glass.
Right.
Anything else you wanted to share from the past week? Anything going on?
Well, I bought a new computer.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And
sounds great.
Yeah, this is the laptop. This is not the new computer, but It is a gaming computer primarily. It obviously has full computer functions, but it's built for playing games on. So it has a
Playing games. I remember those, those carefree days.
It has a an up-to-date for now graphics card and audio card and all that stuff, memory, RAM. So very much looking forward to playing, because I have had a PlayStation 4 for a long time now, and they basically have stopped making games for that. So all the new games that look fun and cool and interesting, and all the ads you see where you're like, wow, that looks great for PS5, Xbox S, and PC. And it's like, well, hell. So I either had to buy a new PlayStation 5 or Xbox or get a new computer. And I was talking to a friend about this, that we've gotten to a point where if anything, any electronics, a TV, computer, refrigerator, anything like this, if it lasts more than 5 years, you're pretty much like, well, then I got a good run out of it. And it's absurd, because the things we had as kids, a lot of stuff is still working. You know, like, yeah, he had to say everything was built better in the old days, but much of it was. We've become a disposable society for electronics. Whereas the TV you bought in the 70s or 80s was built to last. It was going to last you for until you wanted a new TV, not because you needed a new TV. And now it's like, these are just built for, as we've discussed on this show in the past, if something goes wrong, what do the repairmen tell you? It's cheaper to get a new one than it would be to fix this. And that's crazy. But that's the society we've, so I was looking at my computer and I'm like, it's not bad, but it's slow. It's been a while. I could use a new computer anyway. May as well do it before I need one. So it's still in the other room that I can use it if I need to and access the files. But yeah, it's amazing. When you turn this one on, it's like, wow, this is fast. This is really cooking with gas now.
Yeah. I need a new laptop. I don't know how long I've had this one. It's been a long time. Some of the keys on the keyboard don't work anymore. So I had to go buy a like $10 keyboard and I plug it into it and I use that keyboard. So I have a laptop with another keyboard that I use.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like my car. I'm using it until it don't work no more. And then I'll get a new one. So,
right.
But yeah,
100%. But by the time it doesn't work anymore, you've got a lot of files on there.
That's true.
You know, you got to be able to back that up now so that if it did crash, you wouldn't be like, well, how do I get all the stuff off of there?
I definitely need to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're heading into December. And by the way, on the ride home from Thanksgiving dinner, the wife put on Christmas music as we're driving home. Like, I can't
come on.
I can't even get through the end of the day.
Come on. Midnight. Midnight. Midnight.
Yeah. Well, we're going to change up the first period a little bit this week.
After she opens her last gift, you can start taking down the Christmas decorations.
Yeah, right.
It's over.
That would go over very well.
Well, turnabout is fair play. How's it feel?
I don't need that drama in my life. I don't need that. So we're going to change up the first period a little bit. And because it's our show, we can do whatever the hell we want. But I thought there were some pretty significant stories this week that were a little bit bigger than the games. And no disrespect to the games, we'll obviously get to that. But we're going to lead off with some of the big stories. And we will start with the obvious one. And that's the Chicago Blackhawks. General manager Kyle Davidson said Tuesday that the front office was told during a team trip last week that Corey Perry committed a possible misconduct. It led to an internal investigation culminating with the organization cutting ties with the veteran winger. Davidson spoke with reporters for about 10 minutes to address the team's decision to move on from Perry after the Blackhawks announced earlier in the day they had placed the 38-year-old on unconditional waivers for the purpose of terminating his contract. In the initial statement, the Blackhawks said, this is before Kyle Davidson spoke to the media, they said that Perry had engaged in conduct that was described as unacceptable, said it was a violation of both the terms of his contract and the team's internal policies that are, quote, intended to promote professional and safe work environments, end quote. They did not detail what allegedly happened. The questions around Perry's absence led to social media speculation over the days that followed. There was some pretty ugly speculation that, we'll just say it, that Corey Perry had some sort of sexual encounter with the mother of rookie Connor Bedard, the number one overall pick in the draft this past season, and your leading rookie scorer right now in the league. Davidson did address those rumors in his opening statement. He said the incident did not involve any player or their family members. And he said, quote, anything that suggests otherwise or anyone that suggests otherwise is wildly inaccurate. And frankly, it's disgusting, end quote. Upon being asked if the incident itself was criminal or could potentially be criminal, Davidson said, quote, it's a workplace matter, end quote. Davidson also declined to answer whether the incident involved another Blackhawks team employee. However, ESPN is reporting that Perry did in fact have an incident that involved a team employee. Davidson said the NHL and the NHLPA were aware of what was happening before, noting that a team incident and it was a team decision. Davidson said that the team was first notified of the allegation last week when the Blackhawks were in Columbus. That was when Corey Perry was not allowed to play in the game against the Blue Jackets. Perry had initially taken a leave of absence from the team. Davidson told reporters that the decision to send Perry away from the team was made by management. Perry's agent said that it was Perry's decision to leave the Blackhawks. As for Corey Perry, signed a one-year contract with $4 million in the offseason to join the team. 19-year veteran has 1,273 games between the Ducks, Stars, Canadians, Lightning, and Blackhawks. Won a Stanley Cup with the Ducks in 2007. And, of course, won the Hart Trophy as MVP of the league in 2010 and 2011. So, obviously, very ugly in a lot of different ways. Bottom line, Corey Perry is no longer a member of the Chicago Blackhawks. What exactly he did, like I said, ESPN's reporting it was some sort of incident with a team employee. But the big story here is obviously what was put out on social media and the real ugliness that things on social media can start. Connor Bedard and his family's been dragged into this, obviously through no fault of their own. And by all accounts, it appears that was an awful, awful lie that was put out there on social media.
Well, but yes, first of all, secondly, that's what happens. In the absence of information, speculation will fill the vacuum. And so if you're not going to tell us anything,
but there's speculation and then there's that.
No. I'm not saying I'm not justifying it. I'm saying by not telling us anything, that's what's going to happen, is there's going to be speculation. And the one that's going to go around the fastest is the most salacious one, right? Because that's going to get the traction. That's human nature, unfortunately. You think back to some of the rumors that went around about Richard Gere and Australian singer married Rachel Hunter.
Rod Stewart.
Rod Stewart. You think about those two dudes and what rumors they had going around about them back in the 80s. Untrue, but salacious, and everybody knew them. And there's a whole thing about how those traveled back in the day. But anyway, so what I focused on was the statement that they said, Corey Perry has engaged in conduct that is unacceptable. That's all subjective. But the key part was, and in violation of both the terms of his standard player's contract and the Blackhawks' internal policies intended to promote professional and safe work environments. So it's not just a Blackhawks team rule that he violated. It's, according to them, terms of his standard player's contract. So we don't know what that is, obviously. It's all speculation beyond that. But it is telling that Corey Perry has not come out and said this is outrageous. His agent has not come out and said this is outrageous. The NHLPA has not come out and said this is outrageous. So the people with details that know what did happen are not exactly coming to Corey Perry's defense and saying, you can't do this. You can't terminate his contract or his contract for what he did. So that's telling to me. I don't know that we will ever get the details, but as you said, ultimately, he is a free agent. He's a former Blackhawk. I am interested to see if the NHLPA does fight it, though, only because of the precedent of terminating a contract mid-season and what that implication could have going forward. Because I'm sure there's a lot of players that at some point or another violate terms of their standard player's contract. because there's probably a lot of language in there that is very specific that most of the time gets overlooked. But if you wanted to, you could say, aha, this player has violated his standard player's contract. We terminate his contract immediately and get out of a, let's say, multi-year deal. He's only signed to a one-year, $4 million deal. But what if he was signed to a, you know, what if this was Mark-Edward Vlasic? You don't think the Sharks are looking at him with a fine-tooth comb? Is there anything that can terminate his contract? Because we'd love to get out from underneath that. So I think the NHLPA almost has to appeal just to exhaust that avenue and make sure that the proper conduct has been done here.
I mean, you honestly think if Corey Perry sexually harassed a Blackhawks employee that they're going to fight that?
That's, we don't know that that's what he did.
Okay, but I'm just, okay, let's hypothetically then. You're kind of suggesting that they have to fight anything. They're not going to fight something like that.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I started off with. It's telling that they haven't done anything.
Okay, yet. All right, I agree.
But I'm saying if they, because we don't know the details, they do. So if there is just cause here, then by all means, step aside, let this happen. Like I said, Perry, his agent, and the NHLPA have not said anything yet. And I think the league, obviously the other 31 GMs, they know what happened. There's no secrets in that community. So the fact that he is not being signed anytime soon, I mean, this is not a guy in his prime. He's 38. He's at the end of his career. But, I don't know. It's a very tricky situation, obviously, for all sides. And it's unfortunate. But while we have learned our lesson to never take the Blackhawks at their word.
In the wake of what happened,
right,
for them to cover up something else again would be.
No, correct. We have to take them at their word this time that they are actually learning from their mistakes.
And they have
a new regime applying a new standard here.
And they're going to be very strict with that because of what's happened with them. They're going to not, anything.
They can't overlook anything.
Correct. They've got to act on it. They can't let anything
slide. The other 31 teams have a little bit of rope, a little bit of slack in the rope. The Blackhawks do not. So
correct.
Yeah. And we'll see. But I mean, the speculation, because you can start eliminating things, right? Okay. It's not criminal. But sexual harassment would be criminal, yeah? Depending on what he did. Lewd activity.
Could be, yeah.
Could be. It's not substance or alcohol abuse because there's treatment programs for that, and he didn't enter that. So you start eliminating things of what it could be, and you're left with, look, it's not against the standard player's conduct to sleep with a player's family member.
Correct. And the NHLPA would definitely fight that.
Right.
Because that's two consenting adults engaging in.
Correct.
Maybe an immoral act, but that's, I don't know. You talk about the language in a contract. It is very vague.
Right.
You know, something that embarrasses the organization, I guess. But I think the PA
They didn't do it publicly. You're the one revealing it. And we think back to that. I always forget that player who it was. Zubov? He was on the Stars. He knew it was time to retire when teammates were dating his daughter.
Oh, I remember Guy Carboneau, I think it was. Was his daughter was actually dating, I think, Jamie Benn, maybe married him, I think.
Yeah.
So that could have been.
And so, but I mean that, you know, if you're going to date my offspring, that road goes both ways. I can date your mother. that's, as you said, that's two consenting adults doing that's their business. So that's not violating standard player contract or conduct. And the NHLPA would absolutely fight that and justifiably so. But we don't have the details yet of what happened, what he did allegedly, but it is very telling that he's not saying anything. His agent is not saying anything. And the NHLPA is not saying anything in his defense.
And I've always talked about whether something's a big story or not. Number one, does my wife ask me, what's this about? Which she did. And is it talked about on Fox Sports Radio where I worked? And it was. So,
well, because of the salaciousness.
Of course.
Not because of it. What got them talking about it? That he slept with Connor Bedard's mom.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. That's not the story, though. That's just the rumor.
But it's still a big hockey story. I mean,
yeah.
So anyway. All right. Another former Blackhawk is in the news. Three-time Stanley Cup champion Patrick Kane signing a one-year $2.75 million contract with the Detroit Red Wings. Kane spent his first 16 years, of course, in Chicago, was a part of three Stanley Cup winning teams, was traded to the Rangers last spring. He is coming off of hip resurfacing surgery, nine-time All-Star, apparently had a handful of teams that he met with over the last month, including the Sabres, Panthers, Stars, Maple Leafs, and Bruins. 35-year-old has 1,237 points in 1,180 games during his career, fourth most among active players, and his 451 career goals, sixth most among active players. And I believe I read he is scheduled to make his debut with the Red Wings sometime next week. But Patrick Kane, now a member of the Detroit Red Wings. Interesting, interesting decision on his part.
Yeah, because they're certainly having a good season, right? They're still in a playoff spot, but they're not a team you look at and say, well, they're a cup contender. They're going after it. But like you said, he met with his teams. Depending on what he heard from them as far as his role, his minutes, the coaching staff, the fit with the roster,
I got to assume being reunited with Alex DeBrincat was maybe part of the decision.
Could have been. I mean, if that was what they told him, is like, look, you're going to be on a line with DeBrincat. How's that sound? Okay. At least there's some familiarity there. But no, I think once you weigh all your factors and where you want to live, and he's used to that upper Midwest area and culture and climate. So wish him the best, unless he's playing the Ducks. But it wasn't, if I laid out the options for him, it's not the one I would have put at the top of the board and said, I can see him with the Detroit Red Wings and Chicago Blackhawks fans.
Who would you have put at the top of the board? Just curious.
I mean, the Rangers always seemed like a good fit just because of the past connections, but I get that he wouldn't go back there. If I was looking at it and I said, who could use him and where would he be a good fit? I would have said Carolina.
All right.
But that's all for another day. He's signed. He's in Detroit now. And I think Chicago Blackhawks fans have got to be getting very sick of seeing future Hall of Famers, former Blackhawks, signing with the Detroit Red Wings.
You know, it's been a while since Chelios did it. But
I know, but yeah. Still.
I hear you.
It's a really, of all the teams, man, you got to go to former. Luckily, they're not in the same conference, same division anymore, but you got to go to a rival like that. Come on. But it is an interesting fit. I'm going to be anxious to watch him play. I'll definitely watch his first game to see how he looks. See, obviously the teams did a physical workout with him, saw him on the ice, saw how he was playing. And there was enough interest that more than one team was saying, yeah, we're ready to sign you up right now. So it's an interesting thing. And I think it's a unique circumstance to have a star player, future Hall of Famer, that is coming off a serious injury, missing the first 2 months of the season, but also in good enough shape to say, I'm ready to go, and then have that be an option. And if more veterans did that, I think, and didn't force themselves to be ready by free agency, by the start of the season, said, I'm going to take the time I need to get fully healthy, and then mid-season, I'm going to weigh my options and see if anybody's looking for a hired gun for the stretch run. It's basically a trade deadline acquisition without having to give anything up. We brought in a veteran sniper to help our team in their playoff run, and we didn't have to give up any assets to get him. So win-win for the Red Wings.
We had another coaching change. Minnesota Wild firing Dean Evason, replacing him with John Hines, who previously coached the Predators and the Devils. Assistant coach Bob Woods was let go as well. At the time of the firing, the Wild were 5-10-4, 14 points, riding a seven-game winless streak, and had only four regulation wins on the season, tied for the second fewest in the NHL. Wild were 22nd in goals per game and second worst defensively, allowing 3.95 goals per game. Goaltenders Philip Gustafsson and Marc-Andre Fleury had save percentages in the 800s. Evason was in his fifth season as Wild head coach, had a record of 147-77-27. Minnesota did make the playoffs all 4 years he was there, but they didn't win a playoff series, and they haven't for a while. As for John Hines, he was fired by the Predators in May after 4 seasons in Nashville, was also head coach of the Devils for 5 seasons. His teams have qualified for the playoffs 4 times. but they've never advanced out of the first round. Hines does have a history with two of the Wild's top executives. He was the head coach of the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins when Bill Guerin was their general manager, and he was also hired by Ray Shiro of the Devils, who's now a senior advisor with Minnesota.
Well, as I said to you on text message, well, that'll fix it.
Yeah.
You know, I think Dean Evason was clearly the problem, holding this team back and thwarting them at every opportunity. And now that John Hines is behind the bench, the team ought to just take off like a rocket. But that's obviously sarcasm. But the real crux of it, what I told you was, they had to try something. I mean, they've been terrible. And their defense and goaltending have been the issues. And that's where
I think it's all been the issues, frankly. I think they're bad all the way around.
But let's look at their ranks here. They're second worst in giving up goals. They give up 3.8 goals per game. The only team worse than them is the San Jose Sharks. Their penalty kill is the absolute worst in the league. They only kill 68.5% of the penalties they take. I mean, my God, that's awful. When teams are scoring more than 31% of the time against you, that's killing you. Now, goals for, middle of the pack. They're 19th. So their average, their offense is not terrible. And their power play is also middle of the pack. It is coming in at 24th. So not great, but not egregiously bad. Their defense and penalty kill have been egregiously bad. And that's what's killed them so far. Now, to your point, they're not scoring gangbusters. But if their defense and penalty kill were just average, they'd have a lot more points in the bank right now than just 16, which is where they're at. The only team they're ahead of in their division in the Central is the Chicago Blackhawks, and it's only a 2-point lead. So they need to do something. They have they have time on their hands here. It's still in November, still 4 full months of the season left to go. So plenty of time to turn things around and make a run at the playoffs. They're not that far out. They're only 6 points behind the Nashville Predators for the final wild card spot in their in the conference. So plenty of time to turn things around. And this is certainly the shock to the system, the wake up call to the players. And he literally called them Monday morning to potentially wake them up with the news that Dean Evason's been fired and John Hines is your new head coach. But now it is Bill Guerin. This is his, as you said, a guy that he has ties to in John Hines. He hired this coach. He has put together this roster. He is the team's president and GM. It is entirely his team, and the results are now on him. Because the first thing you have to do when your team is struggling like this unexpectedly is change the head coach. That's the first responsible thing, because it's a lot easier to do that than to start making trades, unless you see an obvious problem on your roster. And if you do, that's also on you. That's admitting you did something wrong because you put together the roster. So I get this move. We'll see how it goes. New coaches usually give a bump when they first come in because the players got their attention, that people are going to start being held accountable for the results on the ice. So I do expect a little bump here from the Minnesota Wild. Woe be to the teams that have to play them in the next week or so, or 10 days or so, because the last week or 10 days, easy pickings, come and get your wins, might not be the case in the near future. But you got to try this first if you're Minnesota. But if it does not work, if they end up missing the playoffs, if the team continues to struggle defensively, struggle on the penalty kill, wallow around at the bottom of the Central Division, then at the end of the season, Bill Guerin is going to be the one on the hot seat, I think, of why is this team not working? Why is this team not making the playoffs? Why is this team not successful when you picked the roster, you've made the draft picks, and you hired the coach?
All right, we still have some injury news. There was a trade and some other notes to pass along, but those were the big stories of the week. Now let's get into what happened on the ice over the past 7 days. We'll start with Wednesday, where there were 14 games on the schedule. We're going to mention 10 of them. The Bruins beat the Panthers 3-1 in a rematch of last season's big playoff upset. Of course, a very small measure of revenge for Boston in that one. The Rangers edged the Penguins 1-0. Jonathan Quick, 32 saves for his 60th career shutout. Alexis Lafreniere scored the only goal of the game. Red Wings shut out the Devils 4-0. Alex Lyon only had to make 16 saves in the shutout. New Jersey had 7 shots on goal in the first, 7 in the second, and 2 in the third. Golden Knights edge the Stars 2-1 in overtime. Jack Eichel gets the game winner in a rematch of the Western Conference Finals. The Jets edge the Lightning 3-2 in overtime. Adam Lowry with the game winner in OT. The Capitals beat the Sabres 4-3 in overtime. Dylan Strome, overtime game winner for Washington. Also in that game, Buffalo rookie Zach Benson scored his first career goal. It was a between-the-legs goal. And I know there were some saying that that was the maybe the most highlight-worthy first goal in NHL history. Don't know about that, but certainly was for your first goal. They're all memorable, I guess, but that one was certainly very memorable for Zach Benson. Avalanche beat the Canucks 5-2. Colorado outscored Vancouver 3-0 in the third. Hurricanes down the Oilers 6-3. Carolina scoring 4 goals in a 5.5-minute span of the first period that chased Stuart Skinner from the net. Blues outscore the Coyotes 6-5. 4 goals scored in the first, 6 in the second, but just 1 in the third. That was the game winner from Kevin Hayes for St. Louis. And the Blue Jackets snapped their 9-game losing skid with a 7-3 win over the Blackhawks.
Couple games I want to focus on. One player, one game. I think we saw a preview of the Western Conference Final on this day. I think that that Golden Knights Stars game was one that we can look at and certainly look at, like, man, those are the two of the best teams in the league, and it was a great game. Grandma Fiddler probably picked up the phone after that one, especially since she's a frequent Stars viewer in the past. But that just Aiden Hill has been playing great, obviously, and we thought there might be some drop off, that last year was some magic from Aiden Hill and it wouldn't last. It's lasting. He is he's playing great behind that team. He's a perfect fit with their defensive system, and he is seems to be in the flow. And Jake Oettinger played very well, but he was outdone by Aiden Hill in that game. So very impressive. And the player I want to focus on is a player you're familiar with, Eddie, and I'm just curious how this is happening. Jonathan Quick.
Yeah.
The guy was hot garbage in recent years and had clearly lost his fastball, as they say, lost his eye, lost his reflexes, looked that step slow in the last couple of years with Vegas and with Los Angeles. How is he 6-0 with a 1.99 goals against average and a 9.30 save percentage this season? He looks fantastic. And I don't, you know, it's one thing. If you look, if this was baseball, I'd say the guy's clearly on steroids because suddenly he's playing better. You know what I'm saying?
No, I hear you.
But that's not the case here. That's not what happens for goalies. So I'm just curious if you've seen enough of him or have any theories on how he is, how Stella got her groove back in New York, and why Jonathan Quick is suddenly a very good, maybe the best backup goalie in the entire NHL.
Well, I think you mentioned pitchers, right? Losing your fastball. We've seen pitchers in the past who are guys who are fastball pitchers, right? And then as they get older, they lose that fastball and they have to figure out other ways to get people out. So I think you could use that analogy a little bit with Jonathan Quick, in that he's had to adjust his style. He's not as athletic as he once was. So he has to make things a lot more basic, a lot more fundamental. We talk about this, obviously, in the second period with Kenny Albert, the voice, the radio voice of the New York Rangers. But I think, the goalie coach in Florida, Benoit Allaire, one of those guys who's very well respected. Certainly, he's maybe worked a little magic with Jonathan Quick as well. But all in all, it's still shocking.
Goalie coach with the Rangers?
The Rangers, yes.
Yeah.
Did I say something else? Sorry.
Florida, sorry.
So probably a mix of that. I'll be curious to see if he can keep it going, but you're right. It is one of the more surprising stories in the NHL right now, and good for him. I thought once he won that cup in Vegas, he was going to ride off into the sunset and say, that's it. I'm going out with this nice little last moment of my career. I guess the Rangers, though, that was his childhood team. He's from Connecticut, so he gets to go back home to the East Coast, and he figured, well, maybe this is a better way to kind of end my career. But he's outplayed Igor Shesterkin. He has, bottom line. I don't think there's any kind of goalie controversy there. I think the Rangers are just thrilled with what he's given him, as long as he's going to give it to him. But you're right. It's very surprising. It's very shocking. And he's somehow found, at least for now, the old magic. But
he already has two shutouts. He's only started seven games, and he has two shutouts this season. He hasn't had more than two shutouts since 2018. So, I mean, we're going back a ways for him to be this good. And if you're wondering the stats, last year he had a 3.5 goals against average and an 876 save percentage with the Kings. Then he goes to Vegas and had a 3.13 goals against average and a 901 save percentage. So, and those are two good teams, the Kings and Golden Knights, obviously winning a Stanley Cup with Vegas. So for him to be this dramatically better, it's absolutely baffling. I was surprised he got the contract. He has proven me too. Wrong so far. See, my goodness.
I think he's proven everybody wrong at this point.
But I mean, good on the Rangers for seeing something in him and believing in him enough to give him that contract.
Yeah. I mean, there was talk of him being put on waivers in the preseason. So, I mean, good for him. No games on Thursday, obviously. That was Thanksgiving here in the United States. So we had a slew of games on Friday, 15. And we had an NHL record, Doug, on that day. I don't know if you saw this. 13 road teams won games on Friday. That was the most road wins in a single day in NHL history. We're going to talk about 12 of these 15 games. We'll start with the Red Wings.
I think you might be surprised by the home teams that won as well.
Yeah. The Red Wings handed the Bruins their first home loss in regulation this season. 5-2 was the final. Boston at that point had two regulation losses. Both came at the hands of Detroit. Kings beat the Ducks 5-2. LA improving to 9-0 on the road this season. That's tied for the second longest road winning streak to start a season in NHL history. The record is 10. Lightning knock off the Hurricanes 8-2 in the return of Andrei Vasilevsky in net for Tampa Bay. His season debut from injury. Braden Point had a hat trick. Not a great night for Antti Raanta of Carolina. He allowed 8 goals on 14 shots. That is the most goals ever allowed on 14 or fewer shots. Blackhawks beat the Maple Leafs 4-3 in overtime. Rookie defenseman Kevin Korchinski gets the OT game winner for Chicago. The Oilers blank the Capitals 5-0. Stuart Skinner bouncing back. 25 saves in the shutout. Leon Draisaitl had 2 goals. And Connor McDavid had 4 assists. Jets shut out the Panthers 3-0. Connor Hellebuck, 33 saves in net. Rangers down the Flyers 3-1. Mika Zibanejad, a couple of goals. Igor Shesterkin, 36 saves in net. Flames score 4 goals in the third period in Dallas, beat the Stars 7-4, and their 7 goals were all scored by 7 different players. Avalanche got by the Wild 3-2 on a rare goal from defenseman Kevin McDermott. He played 7 seasons in the NHL. That was his 10th career goal. Sabres were down 2-0, then outscored the Penguins 3-0 in the third period for a 3-2 win. Blue Jackets beat the Devils 2-1, New Jersey dropping to 8-9-1 on the season with that loss. Islanders knock off the Senators 5-3 in New York, played with only 4 defensemen after first period injuries to Adam Pelish and Sebastian Aho, but they get the win anyway.
Well, looking at some of the games that you mentioned here, the ones I want to kind of focus on, let's start with Edmonton, 5-0 win, boat race win over the Capitals on the road. Impressive performance by them. They've obviously had their struggles. Stuart Skinner, perfect in net with 25 saves. 2 goals from from Draisaitl, a goal from Evander Kane, a goal from Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. That's exactly what they wanted to come out of the holiday break there. So big win for them, I thought, on the road. Also big win for Columbus Blue Jackets, a team that has struggled this season and has had some problems, you know, public problems with the benchings and the healthy scratches and stuff like that. Great win for Elvis Merzlikins, who had 37 saves, only allowed 1 goal. Thought that was an impressive performance by him. The goals they got, Boone Jenner, Eric Robinson getting his first goal of the season, but Boone Jenner with his 11th. So he's been having a good season on a bad team, and that's a bad loss for New Jersey on home ice against a team that's struggling. You got to get more than 1 goal. And you mentioned on their Wednesday game before Thanksgiving, they started the holiday break early with that 2 shots in the third period of a game they were losing. Just a pathetic effort from them going into the break. And then the other one is the Flames win over the Stars. We talk about the Stars a lot here, being a Stanley Cup contender with good reason. They've got a great roster from top to bottom, but impressive performance. Not so great defensively, giving up 4 goals. But Jacob Markstrom gets the win, even though he gives up 4 goals. It's the impressive offense. As you said, 7 different goal scorers. 7 different goals against Jake Oettinger. He was in net. They did not go with Scott Wedgwood. That was the number one goalie for a guy that we said a couple weeks ago could be a Vezina finalist. They put 7 behind him, and that's very impressive for the Columbus or for the Calgary Flames. I thought that was a big win for them.
Let's move on to Saturday. We had 8 games. We're going to talk about 7 of them. Sorry, Avalanche Flames. The Rangers beat the Bruins 7-4 in one of the bigger matchups of the week. Chris Kreider, 2 goals, and Jonathan Quick gets the win in net to improve to 6-0-1 on the season. Coyotes shut out the Golden Knights 2-0. Connor Ingram, 34 saves in net for Arizona. Kings blank the Canadiens 4-0. Phoenix Copley just 18 saves in the win. LA won 5 in a row. Flyers over the Islanders 1-0 in a shootout. So both goaltenders Samuel Ersson from Philadelphia and Ilya Sorokin of the Islanders get credit for the shutout. Tyson Forrester gets the only goal in the shootout for New York in that one. Penguins get by the Maple Leafs 3-2. Erik Karlsson, the game winner for Pittsburgh. Devils get a much-needed win, beating the Sabres 7-2. Tyler Toffoli, 2 goals. As New Jersey captain Nico Hischier returned from injury, he had a goal and an assist. And the Sharks surprised the Canucks 4-3, just their 4th win of the season.
Yeah, the Sharks win was very impressive and surprising. Again, why I don't gamble on sports. The Canucks have been one of the best teams in the NHL all season. The Sharks have been the worst team in the NHL all season. And surprising result. Now, it was Casey DeSmith in net, but if you're ever going to give your starter a night off, it's a game against the Sharks. And Casey DeSmith unable to come through with it. They only got 22 shots on him. He still allowed 4 goals to get past him. So that's one too many, but impressive job by the Sharks there. Another game I want to focus on is the Devils, who had struggled before and coming out of the break. They with a 7-2 win, very impressive offensively from them to bounce back and get a big win. Vitek Vanacek in net. As you said, only 12 shots faced the entire game. My goodness. 3 shots in the first, 3 shots in the second, 6 shots in the third by Buffalo. That's awful to get 12 shots. Considering New Jersey had 17 in the first period. So they had 5 more shots in the first period than Buffalo had the entire game. But the offense got going. I think you saw some urgency there from the Devils after an awful game that they had. And Jack Hughes getting back in the lineup certainly helps that. But the other one, the game of the night for me, and granted we're biased because we're West Coast guys and Pacific Division fans, but the Coyotes going into Vegas and beating them 2-0 in regulation is a big win, I think, for their confidence. Getting a shutout, 34 save shutout for Connor Ingram, getting 2 goals in a close game, you know, going into the third, it's 0-0. It's anybody's game. Having the opportunity there and getting goals from leaders in that locker room, Lawson Crouse and Clayton Keller, that's got to feel so good for that team. Lawson Crouse's was an empty netter. Who cares? It's a celebration goal. But Clayton Keller's your star forward. He gets the game-winning goal. You get a shutout. You beat a rival that has had the better of you in the past on the road. That's a big win, I think, for their psyche and their mentality as the season continues.
All right, let's move on to Sunday. We had 5 games on the schedule. We're going to talk about 4 of them. Sorry, Blues, Blackhawks. The Red Wings knock off the Wild 4-1 in what would be the last game for Minnesota head coach Dean Evason. Oilers roll over the Ducks 8-2. Connor McDavid, a 5-point game with a goal and 4 assists. Predators edge the Jets 3-2. Gustav Nyquist's power play goal ended up being the game winner. It was Nashville's 5th straight win. Hurricanes rally to beat the Blue Jackets 3-2, scoring all 3 goals in a span of 8 minutes and 4 seconds in the third period. All 5 goals in this game came actually in the third period. So those were your 5 games, 4 games, excuse me, to mention on Sunday.
And the 2 I want to touch on is the Red Wings win over the Wild, the last game for Dean Evason. Again, 4 goals allowed, only 22 shots against. So the defense is not giving up that many shots. And they put 38 shots on net on Detroit, but they only got 1 goal to show for it. Tough matchup there for Minnesota at the end result when it's all said and done. And that's one of the games that they're going to look at and say, usually we got to win that game. If we're out shooting the opponent 38-22, we got to do better than getting beat 4-1, not even being in it in the last minutes of that game. So we'll see if that changes under John Hines. And the other game is the game you started with or mentioned as well, Connor McDavid's 5-point night against the Ducks in an 8-2 boat race win for the Oilers. We've talked about him being hurt and playing through the injury, and we both were under the impression that if he's truly that injured, sit him down, let him get healthy. I understand that you need wins, but that kind of a night is going to make him feel a lot better. And if he still has those kind of performances in him, then obviously they're doing the right thing, keeping him on the ice, because certainly looked like the Connor McDavid of old with 5 points that game, and that entire offense is starting to get clicking now. Again, another goal from Evander Kane, another goal from Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, another goal from Leon Draisaitl, two from Zach Hyman. These are the star players they need to get clicking, and they were all clicking that night in a big win.
Yeah, I don't know if they pulled out the magic spray for Connor McDavid, but he certainly looks healthy this week. Yeah. Moving on to Monday, 7 games on the schedule. We're going to talk about 5 of them. Blue Jackets surprised the Bruins 5-2. That's Boston's third straight loss, so they're suddenly in a little bit of a slump for them anyway. Sabres down the Rangers 5-1. Alex Tuch, 2 goals for Buffalo. Flames beat the Golden Knights 2-1 in overtime. Mackenzie Weegar with the overtime game winner. The Avalanche beat the Lightning 4-1. Ryan Johansson, 2 goals for Colorado. And we had the Tkachuk faceoff. Panthers over the Senators, 5-0, but the score was kind of secondary. Sergei Bobrovsky, 20 saves in the shutout. Sam Reinhart, 2 goals. But the game featured 167 penalty minutes. 106 of those penalty minutes came from one scrum. It included everyone on the ice, minus the goalies, being thrown out of the game. All 10 skaters received 10-minute misconducts with about 7.5 minutes to play. Surprisingly, there was no Tkachuk fight. I did not see the two brothers actually ever get into it other than verbally. The Tkachuk family was there in attendance. Father, Keith, seemed indifferent by it all. I think Grandma Tkachuk was not quite amused by what was going on. But that was certainly an interesting game, and the audio got a lot of play on TV and radio of the official. I don't know who what his name was, basically calling out the penalties and then saying everyone on the ice as a 10-minute misconduct.
Yeah, and one of them was Brady Tkachuk, who was definitely involved in that. He got multiple penalties there, roughing against Ryan Lomberg, also cross-checking. Or goalie interference against Sergei Bobrovsky at that point, and then it all hell broke loose, and everybody out of there. Which, you know, the game was out of hand at that that point anyway. So go ahead and get it out of your system.
Old time hockey.
That's exactly right. I got no problem with that. You know,
it was quite a spectacle.
In the fight, yeah,
yeah,
and I don't think anybody was booing. Were they? You know, I've watched it a couple times. I didn't hear anybody looking upset. Or demanding their money back.
Probably happy the Senators showed at least that little bit of fight. But I've always said, you know, back in the day when we had those staged fights late in the game, how about you show that fire and fight in the first period instead of when you're getting your ass kicked in the third? But
yes, but this wasn't staged.
No, it wasn't. No,
this was just an explosion of frustration.
Correct, correct. And you've got, by the way, you've got Matthew Tkachuk on the other team, and he's in the middle of everything. And it's effective. It's why he continues to do it. But, yeah.
Right. And so the games I want to mention, or the game that I want to talk about from that day, that was actually a big game, I thought, was the Avalanche Lightning. You mentioned Andre Vasilevsky is back. He was in net for this game, gave up 3 goals to the Avalanche. Not a bad performance, but Alexander Georgiev was just outstanding in this one, and they got goalied. I mean, 38 saves on 39 shots. They dominated the play, I thought, from the very beginning of the game. They outshot them in the first period 14-8, outshot them in the second period 13-8, outshot them in the third 12-7, and yet you lose the game 4-1. So Georgiev was just outstanding and stole that win. That's what goalies can do when they're on top of their game, is steal wins, make what little opportunities you have stand up, and that's what we saw there. Amazing performance by him in a matchup of a couple of teams that have won the Stanley Cup in recent years. Certainly may not meet this year, but teams that have their names on the cup at the bottom of the ring.
And finally, on Tuesday, we had 10 games, going to mention 8 of them. The Wild, in their first game with John Hines as head coach, beat the Blues 3-1. Oilers edged the Golden Knights 5-4 in a shootout. Connor McDavid, only 3 points in this one with a goal and 2 assists. He's got 2 goals and 10 assists in his last 3 games. Stars shut out the Jets 2-0. Jake Oettinger, 27 saves in the shutout. Maple Leafs edged the Panthers 2-1 in a shootout. You had the Predators beating the Penguins 3-2 in overtime. Philip Forsberg, the OT game winner. Nashville's suddenly won six in a row. And congrats to friend of the show, Pete Weber, who called his 2000th game in that one. He's been a former TV voice, now doing the radio call for Nashville, and has been there with them since their inception, and is a friend of the show. So congrats to Pete Weber. Hopefully
he's the only guy there that can tell Barry that has been there more than Barry Trotz.
That is absolutely right. Yes. And we'll love to talk to you about it. It's a man who loves to talk.
Yep.
Canucks beat the Ducks 3-1. Anaheim's lost seven in a row. Devils get a Curtis Lazar goal with 23 seconds left to edge the Lightning 5-4. And the Coyotes beat the Lightning 3-1. Arizona, by the way, their last six games, or their next six games, however you want to phrase it, are all against the past six Stanley Cup winners. The Blues, the Golden Knights, the Lightning, the Avalanche, the Blues again, and the Capitals. So interesting little quirk on the schedule that was noted.
Yeah, a tour of the Stanley Cup. They get to, like I said, the bottom ring. They're gonna go all the way around it. And would love to add their names to it one of these days. Maybe this season. Who knows? You never know. Teams, we've seen eight seeds come through and win before. A few games that I want to touch on there that you mentioned. And let's start with the Maple Leafs shootout win over the Panthers. Great defensive battle. Anthony Stolarz, former backup goalie for the Ducks, playing great and backup for Florida in this one, with 31 saves to get him there. And Joseph Woll, who was taken over as the starter in Toronto, with an absolutely fantastic game of his own, 38 saves. But they do get the win in the shootout. It went to 12, so six rounds, 12 shoot or six shooters each. But they get the win, does Toronto. So that's a big win for them, 2 points, but a good game from top to bottom. The Devils getting Jack Hughes back and getting – looking like his old self, starting to get back into that groove. He had a goal in that one, a 5-4 win over the Islanders, who, if the Islanders give up five goals, they're probably losing that game. They just do not have the offensive firepower to outscore teams. But Devils looked good in that one. And then the other one was the Wild, of course. You know, you talk about the 3-1 win, first game. We talked about their struggles defensively. They only gave up one goal. We talked about their struggles on the power play or on the penalty kill. They killed all four power plays against them, which is very unheard of for a team that on the season has killed less than 70% total. So I thought immediate dividends, immediate rewards, and that's what I was talking about for the teams that have to play them. After the coaching change, they're going to see a different Wild team than we saw the first 2 months of the season.
All right, let's check the standings as we record this show on November the 29th. We will start in the East, where your top three in the Atlantic are Boston, Florida, and Detroit. The Red Wings were not in a playoff position a week ago, so a nice week for the Red Wings. Your top
three. Is it true that they got 4 points just by signing Patrick Kane?
I don't think so, but if they did, good for them.
Yeah.
In the Metropolitan Division, your top three, the Rangers, Hurricanes, and Flyers. Carolina moving up to number two there. They were a wild card team a week ago. As for the wild card teams in the East, right now you've got both Toronto. Of them coming from the Atlantic. Toronto falling to a wild card spot right now, and Tampa Bay right now is currently your final wild card team. Washington went from third in the Metro to out of the playoffs at the moment. The Capitals, Islanders, and Sabres right now all 3 points out of a wild card spot.
And 1 point behind that trio is the Devils and Penguins. So a good grouping there. Five teams all on the outside looking in, but all 4 points or less out of a playoff spot. And when you look at these playoff berths right now, what a terrible wild card matchup to have to play the Maple Leafs or the Lightning. What a reward for winning your division. And for the first time in a long time, well, all season, and certainly going back a full season as well, the Bruins have company at the top of the division, at the top of the conference. The Rangers have caught them. And are actually ahead of them because they played one less game. But Bruins have, like you said, have lost three straight, five wins in their last 10 games. Struggles, quote unquote, have finally come to Boston.
And I got to give it up to the Florida Panthers. I had them missing the playoffs this year. And they're without still Aaron Ekblad. The name's escaping me, the other defenseman for them that's been out as well. I think they're due back soon. But they're only 3 points behind Boston for the Atlantic Division lead. So I got to give it up to the Florida Panthers. I was wrong on them. I thought the injuries early on, and then expending the energy they did, and kind of shouldn't even have made the playoffs last year. I thought that's the team we were going to see this year. So far, not the case. So good on the Florida Panthers.
Josh Mahura is the other defenseman, but I don't think that's who you were thinking of.
No, it's not. Montour. So Brandon Montour, maybe?
Brandon Montour, yeah.
Yeah. He may have come back recently, but they've been out for most of the season, so
yeah, good for the Panthers. Looking at but I mean, I obviously thought they would play better than you, but yeah, they've been impressive to be this good, because Florida was on such a heater at the start of the season, and for them to be that close already is definitely impressive.
Let's move over to the West. We'll start in the Central, where we had a flip-flopping of the top two teams. Colorado right now is in first place. Dallas drops down to second. Winnipeg is in third place in the Central. In the Pacific, it is the same top three as a week ago: Vegas, Vancouver, and LA, although the Kings do have 4 games in hand on both Vegas and Vancouver. Your wildcard teams are both right now.
Tell me the Kings aren't hoping those 4 games in hand are all on the road.
Yeah, that would be fine. Yeah, that would be fine. Unbelievable how they've played on the road.
Yeah, and also unbelievable their struggles at home. Only 4 wins in 10 games.
Yeah, they do have, I think they have points in like 6 or 7 of them, but they've kind of corrected that in the last, I think they've won 3 in a row at home or something like that. So I think they're okay. It was an interesting storyline early on, but I think they're okay, but they are ridiculous on the road right now.
Yes.
Your two wildcard teams in the West right now are both out of the Central. That would be St. Louis and Nashville, with their winning streak, has moved into the final wildcard spot. Seattle has dropped out for the moment. You've got Arizona actually is tied with Nashville, but the Predators do have one more regulation win, so they would get the tiebreaker at the moment. And then you've got Calgary and Seattle 1 point out of that last wild card spot in the West.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting race. Obviously, the wild card spot is where it's at. The top, there's already a gap between the three in the Pacific and everybody else. And so those three are going to make the playoffs. It's just a matter of what order they finish, most likely. And then in the Central, there's a gap between Colorado, Dallas, and even Winnipeg to an extent, but less so. But they're kind of separating themselves from the pack as well. So it looks like it's going to be St. Louis, Nashville, Arizona, Calgary, Seattle fighting it out for that wild card spot. And that's a good matchup because those teams play each other a lot. Obviously, Arizona, Nashville, and St. Louis in the Central, Calgary and Seattle in the Pacific, but all in the West, and they will be playing each other. So there's going to be meaningful games when they match up against each other down the road. Wondering about the rest of the standings, the Ducks are the Oilers, the Wild, the Blackhawks, and the Sharks are all pretty far out of it right now. Ducks having lost 7 straight. Oilers starting to turn things around, though. They've won 3 straight. So by next week, we could have them up with the Kraken, the Flames, the Coyotes in a little bit of a race for the wild card.
Checking the stats, your points leader is Nikita Kucherov of Tampa Bay with 37. Second place and third place are a couple of Canucks. JT Miller's got 35 points. Quinn Hughes with 33. Cale Makar of the Avalanche has 32 points. David Pastrnak of Boston with 31 points. And then you've got Braden Point from Tampa Bay. Artemi Panarin for the Rangers. Elias Pettersson of the Canucks all with 30 points.
How about two defensemen in the top four?
Yeah,
of the entire NHL in scoring. I mean, my goodness, that Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar are putting on a show out here out West.
As far as your goal leader, Brock Besser of Vancouver has 17 goals. Nikita Kucherov of Tampa Bay has 15. So does Sam Reinhart of Florida. Kyle Connor, I don't think he had a goal this week. He and Austin Matthews both have 14. JT Miller and David Pastrnak and Sidney Crosby and Frank Vedrano and Chris Kreider all have 13 goals.
Yeah, so a little bit of a log jam there at sixth. But Brock Besser, man, what a season he's having. And he's going for the Cy Young, too, because he's got 26 points. So only 9 assists, but 17 goals. And so he's definitely, if he gets it, he's shooting and he's liking what he's seeing. He's got an unsustainable 26.2% shooting percentage success. So when he shoots it, 26.2% of his shots are going in. That's not going to last, but as long as it does, keep feeding him the puck.
Checking the netminders, Aiden Hill of Vegas is your leader in the goals against average, 1.96. Jonathan Quick of the Rangers is at 1.99. Cam Talbot of the Kings at 2.02. Thatcher Demko of the Canucks at 2.10. As far as save percentage, Aiden Hill of the Golden Knights leading at 933. Cam Talbot of the Kings is at 931. Jonathan Quick of the Rangers, 930. So is Semyon Varlamov. Thatcher Demko at 928.
Your wins leader, for what that's worth, Alexander Georgiev, 13 wins on the year. Thatcher Demko, 11. And then a trio at 3. Sergei Bobrovsky, Connor Hellebuck, and Cam Talbot all have 10.
All right, let's get to the other news from the week. Certainly not the headlines, but we'll start with the Law and Order report. Minnesota Wild forward Ryan Hartman suspended for 2 games for a dangerous trip of Detroit's Alex DeBrincat. This is Hartman's second suspension this season. He got a 1-game suspension for interference in April. He's been fined 6 times in his NHL career, which started in 2015, including twice for tripping or slew-footing an opponent, which was something similar that he's done this week. Come on. He's been fined 6 times. He's been suspended once already, and you're going to give him a 2-game suspension? Let's bump it up, NHL. Maybe put a little more teeth into it. But
the 2-game suspension should have been about 3 fines ago.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, we should be at a 10-game suspension for him by now because the guy's clearly not learning.
Senators forward Zach MacEwen gets a match penalty and an automatic 1-game suspension for an illegal check to the head of Matthew Tkachuk in that Wild Senators Panthers game. And probably the biggest highlight of the week, I guess you could say, as far as the Law and Order report, Rangers captain Jacob Trouba was fined $5,000, the maximum allowable under the NHL's collective bargaining agreement, for a high stick infraction on the Bruins' Trent Frederick. Trouba used his stick to swing at Frederick's head, making contact. Now, Frederick wasn't injured. There was no penalty called on the play, but a lot of people were not happy about this, not getting some sort of a suspension, which I certainly understand. Even if you believe Jacob Trouba that it was not his intent to hit Trent Frederick in the head with a stick, he still did.
Right. And how was it not? He swung his stick looking right at him with force at his head.
It wasn't like he, swung like a baseball player. He was kind of swinging his stick around. I don't think it was the worst thing I've ever seen. That having been said, I don't know how you make contact with a player's head with your stick forcefully, whether you meant to do it or not. And that doesn't draw some kind of a suspension. Players get obviously penalized in a game. We've seen plenty of times a player accidentally high sticks a player in the face and you get a penalty for that. Sometimes you get a big, a double minor if you draw blood, even if you didn't mean to do it. And if the NHL wants us to take them seriously, and they certainly have made strides in, having spotters for, if you want to take the head injury seriously, a player can't swing a stick and hit another player in the head, even if there's no injury.
During a stoppage in play.
And you don't do something. Yes, very good point. During a stoppage in play. And there isn't at least a 1-game suspension just for the optics of it.
Right.
Yeah.
You cannot swing your stick anywhere near somebody's head and then make contact without suffering a suspension. That should be cut and dry. I mean, swing it as hard as you want at his legs. If you want to get his attention at his pads and stuff, that kind of stuff. Okay. But you can't get it up above the shoulders and then make contact. It wasn't an accident. He knew what he was doing. He intended to swing his stick at that player. He made contact. It's during a stoppage in play. There's no excuse for it. You have to suspend that guy. Even if it's a first offense, that has to be a suspense.
To the ER report, former Hart Trophy winner Taylor Hall will undergo surgery on his right knee and will miss the rest of the season. He had 2 goals and 4 points in 10 games. He was also he was injured when he took a hit from Tampa Bay's Michael Eisenmont on November the 9th. He returned to play on Saturday against Nashville before sitting out the next game, and obviously was diagnosed with the knee issue that was going to require surgery. Hall's 32. He was acquired by the Blackhawks in the offseason in a trade from the Bruins and was signed to a 2-year, or he has 2 years left on his contract, making $6 million a year. But again, Taylor Hall out for the year for the Blackhawks.
I mean, this puts a lot of weight on the shoulders of Nick Foligno because the Blackhawks brought in 2 people to be mentors to Connor Bedard. And that was Corey Perry and Taylor Hall. Corey Perry has been terminated, and Taylor Hall is out for the year with an injury. So the only veteran, true veteran left in that room with any experience and the ability to talk, I mean, maybe Tyler Johnson, but Nick Foligno is it now. And that's the guy that is going to have to be the guy that shoulders the load, shows the work ethic, and answers the questions for the young players, and certainly Connor Bedard as he navigates his first season in the NHL.
New York Rangers place Kaapo Kakko and Filip Hedl both on long-term injured reserve. Golden Knights forward Shea Theodore, successful surgery for an upper body injury. He's week to week. Canucks place Carson Soucy on long-term injured reserve. Pierce Suter is on injured reserve. Toronto Maple Leafs place defenseman John Klingberg on LTIR. Philadelphia Flyers forward Noah Cate's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks with a lower body injury. New York Islanders place Adam Pellish on long-term injured reserve, upper body injury, and Sebastian Aho on injured reserve, upper body injury. And San Jose's Jan Ruda week to week with an upper body injury. Colorado Avalanche defenseman Sam Girard is going to be away from the team indefinitely as he receives care from the NHL and NHLPA Player Assistance Program. 25-year-old had been away from the team for personal reasons. He will continue to be paid while getting treatment. And then will be eligible to return once he is cleared by a program administrator. On Twitter, Girard made a statement through his agency CAA saying the decision was proactive and that he was entering treatment for severe anxiety and depression that had gone untreated for too long and led to alcohol abuse.
Some other players other than Andrei Vasilevskiy coming off IR this past week. Connor Timmins of the Maple Leafs is back, as is Matt Benning for the Sharks, and Alex Goligoski of the Minnesota Wild, Morgan Geeky for the Bruins. Matt Grizzlick from the Bruins also getting back. I'm going through my list here. Rasmus Ristolainen of the Flyers, Nico Hischier for the Devils, Luke Shen of the Predators, Martin Fevrie of the Capitals, and Matt Martin of the Islanders, all activated from IR this past week.
We did have a trade, the Blackhawks acquiring Anthony Beauvillier from the Canucks for the best of the fifth round picks that Chicago has coming up in the 2024 draft. So they have apparently multiple picks. So whichever is the best one in the fifth round will go to the Canucks.
Of this year?
2024.
So interesting. As I'm looking at this, they only have the one as I look on Cap Friendly, but.
Oh, like here, apparently the Canucks are covering their bases. If they acquire another one,
if you get another one, we get
the
it.
Best one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Could be. All right. They needed somebody to fill in the minutes of Corey Perry and Taylor Hall.
Some random shots to close out the first period. The NHL All-Star Weekend in Toronto this February will be an extended 3-day event, with the NHL All-Stars adding Thursday ahead of Friday's skills competition and Saturday's All-Star game. What's going to happen on Thursday? Well, the league is bringing back the All-Star player draft. They will have four captains for the All-Star games and a celebrity captain partner. Oh boy, I can't wait to see what celebrity is involved in this. They'll be drafting the teams on a live event to be held at Scotiabank Arena. Also going to be a completely revamped skills format coming up on Friday. The league will determine its four captains based on their celebrity pairing. I don't know what that means. The NHL is targeting passionate hockey fans for their roles, some of whom may already have existed relationships with certain players or ties to a particular club, talking about these celebrities, I guess. Together, the captains will pick from a pool of available all-stars until there are four left, and then a special guest will assign those players to their respective teams. There will still be a fan vote element as well, beginning in early January, where fans can select 12 players to compete in the All-Star game. The league will announce its players and celebrity captains in January as the league hopes to enliven the All-Star festivities. I'm sure
celebrities, huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I looked up real quick celebrities from Toronto. And there's two of them one of them they're not going to be able to get. One of them I think they would. Jim Carrey, they will not be able to get, but he's from Toronto. Mm-hmm. Mike Myers, I think, is a very strong. Yeah. I think that's a guy that he loves hockey. He loves Toronto. He loves the Maple Leafs. I think he would definitely be involved if they asked him. But it will be interesting to see who they get for sure.
Wild goalie Marc-Andre Fleury wore a custom-designed mask for Native American Heritage Night with the Wild during warm-up before Friday's game against the Avalanche, defying the NHL's rules on what players and teams can do for their special initiatives. Fleury did not appear in the game. His agent, Alan Walsh, said that Fleury was ready to accept any fine from the NHL, although sources say the league is not going to fine Marc-Andre Fleury. Fleury called the league's rules stupid, and he said he was doing so to honor his wife, Veronique, who is a registered member of a tribe in Canada.
Not only that, he got the mask designed by a Dakota artist. This is all... It's an insane policy that it would be against their rules. And if it's not, if they're not going to fine him for doing it, then why have the rules at all? You know, we saw the guy on the Coyotes call their bluff with the Pride tape, and they quickly reversed that. Well, we're not going to fine him for using it, so you're allowed to use that again. And now Marc-Andre Fleury's like, look, my wife is Native American. A Native American artist designed this mask. It's Native American Heritage Night. I'm going to wear the mask. If not now, when? If not this mask, which one? I mean, it's an absurd policy, and good on him for wearing it despite their stupid rules. And it just, I don't understand why they even have the policy to begin with, because how is this, what part of this would possibly be offensive to anyone? It's crazy.
It's
crazy.
Not, but you know, because of the pride thing, they have to make everything, you know, they have to wipe with a broad brush, because if you're going to say that you're not going to do it for that, you know, they don't want to specifically say it's for that. So they have to say everything is off the board. I've seen the LA Kings. I don't know if other teams have done this as well, have found a way around this. You know, on all the broadcasts, they usually will show the players entering the arena. Yep. The Kings wear their jerseys as they walk into the locker room that they then auction off. And I'm sure autograph as well. For whatever the night is. So you see the players wearing the jerseys, but it's not during warmup. But the Kings are still doing that anyway. They're wearing whatever the jersey is, the pride jersey, the military appreciation jersey, the hockey fights cancer jersey. They're still wearing them and they're still showing them, but they're just not doing it during warmup. So they've found a way to get around it.
Keep an eye on the weather as they do it. I think they filmed them all at once. Those were all done in one day at the beginning of the season.
Well, it's they're indoors. They're walking from their cars basically to
the locker room. Oh, well then, yeah, so. Definitely the all right, Drew, now put on this one. This is for in January. We're going to have this diabetes awareness night. All right, now put on this one. And we film. He's got the same pants on, the same shoes. He's got the same haircut. His hair hasn't grown, his beard.
Yep. I think somebody wouldn't notice, but it's possible. And finally, Rick Bowness is back as head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. He had been away from the team since October the 23rd after his wife had suffered a seizure. Team played well without him under Scott Arneil. They were 9-2-2 in Rick Bowness' absence, but he is now back on the bench, and hopefully that's a good sign that his wife is doing well as well.
Yes. The worst, I mean, as you said, they were good under Scott Arneil. If they now struggle under Rick Bowness, it's an awkward situation.
It is a little bit. That's
like, fair. How do we get rid of him to go back to Scott Arneil if that's what we decide to do? And hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully the team takes off. But first and foremost, the main thing is hope his wife is doing better. And obviously she's doing well enough that he can return to work. And that's a great sign.
And for all of you that are big fans of the further review segment, it will return to the Puck Podcast, I'm told, next week. We are excited to welcome back to the show Kenny Albert, TNT's lead play-by-play man for their NHL coverage, the radio voice of the New York Rangers, also calls New York Knicks games for the MSG Network, and you could see him on the NFL on Fox, and somehow he still has time to talk to us. Kenny, thank you so much for your time. How are you?
I'm great, Eddie. How are you?
I'm doing good, and I want to let you know, I just got back from vacation a few weeks ago. I went to New York, and I got to see the Rangers in the Garden. It was a pretty big thrill for a guy who was born and raised on the West Coast. So it was, I saw him play the Hurricanes. Unfortunately, that was the game where Adam Fox got injured, but it was great to get out to the Garden, a place you know so well.
Well, great to hear you made it to the world's most famous arena. It's, you know, for me, I've been going there for over 50 years now, calling games there for about 30 years. So there's no place like it. And glad you got to experience it recently. for the game against the Hurricanes.
Yeah, me too. So I obviously we have you on to talk about the Rangers, maybe a little bit about the NHL as well, but well, pretty good season so far for the New York Rangers. 15-4-1 as we're recording this, leading the Metropolitan Division, tied with Boston for the most points in the NHL with 31, and they beat the Bruins head-to-head this past Saturday, 7-4. Rangers obviously are playing very well. It's not a surprise. We thought they'd be a very good team, but has there maybe been a few things that have been better than expected for the Rangers this season?
Well, it really has been a terrific season to this point. Unfortunately, they've suffered some injuries. You mentioned the Adam Fox injury. He's expected, or at least available, to return as we tape this for the game tomorrow night against Detroit, eligible to come off the long-term injured list. Philip Hedl has also been out. Their second-line center, Vincent Trocheck, has done a great job on that line with Panarin and Lafreniere since Hedl suffered the injury. And last night in the game against Buffalo, they lost Kaapo Kakko to an injury as well. So, you know, the injuries notwithstanding, 15-4-1, as you mentioned, terrific goaltending from the combination of Igor Shesterkin and Jonathan Quick, who's come in a three-time Stanley Cup champion, and he's been tremendous, has not lost the game in regulation. He's 5-0-2 now as a Ranger. Great group of defensemen with Fox when healthy and Lindgren, and then DeAndre Miller and Jacob Trouba, Braden Schneider on the third pairing with Eric Gustafson and Zach Jones. And Gustafson's been a revelation, a guy who's played for seven different teams, and he's filled in for Fox on the power play and has moved up in the lineup. He has a point in 9 of the last 10 games. And then up front, you have a collection of superstars and then some youngsters and veteran players on the third and fourth lines. When you look at Panarin and the season he's had so far with a point in his first 15 games. Chris Kreider with 13 goals. Blake Wheeler playing on the line with Kreider and Zibanejad. Alexi Lafreniere off to a terrific start with 8 goals, his first 20. And then they have some grit with guys like Barclay Goodrow, and I mentioned Wheeler and Jimmy Vesey and Tyler Pitlick, and and then a couple of youngsters mixed in as well. Will Cooley, a rookie, having a real good season. So Peter Laviolette, a first-year coach, with the Rangers. He's won a Stanley Cup with Carolina. He's gotten to the final with Philadelphia and Nashville. So, he's done a terrific job, and he's brought in some veteran assistants. Mike Pekka, who was one of the best faceoff men in the league when he played. The Rangers over the last decade or so have not been great on faceoffs, but they're among the top three in the league this year. Pekka, a big reason why. And then Phil Housley coaching the defense, a Norris Trophy winner, Hall of Famer. So, only 4 regulation losses over the first 20. They're off to a terrific start.
And as you mentioned, Peter Laviolette coming in, taking over for Gerard Gallant. Is there anything from a structure or a strategy standpoint that you can look at and see how this team is playing differently under Laviolette, or was it just a different voice, fresh air kind of thing with the new coach?
It's probably a combination, different voice, bit of a different system. The structure from game one right on out in Buffalo, the Rangers in that game were playing a 1-3-1 trap throughout much of the game, which we hadn't really seen from a Ranger team, at least in the last 10, 15 years and maybe even going further back than that. But the players seem to have bought in right from the start. They won that first game in Buffalo 5-1 and went on a roll. And like I said, through the first quarter of the season, aside from the injuries, it's been all positive from a Ranger standpoint.
I you mentioned it, but I got to get a little bit more specific into the goaltending. And, I'm an LA Kings fan. I saw a lot of Jonathan Quick, a lot of great from Jonathan Quick. But obviously the Kings felt like his better days were behind him, decided to make a move and trade him. He goes to Columbus. He goes to Vegas, a part of a Stanley Cup winning team. And I kind of thought he maybe would ride off into the sunset, but he gets to go back closer to home from Connecticut, play for his childhood team, and he's been a revelation for the Rangers. Is there anything he's said specifically that he's done or has gotten him back on track, so to speak?
He really has been terrific right from the start. Shesterkin played the bulk of the games over the first 2 weeks, and then Quick played a real good game in Seattle. Then Shesterkin was hurt and missed 2 weeks, so Quick took over. In fact, it was one game when they were both injured, and Louis Domingue came in and won a game for the Rangers, but Quick's been outstanding. He has 2 shutouts so far. Seems to be real happy to be playing close to home. Grew up in Connecticut. He was a Ranger fan and seems rejuvenated to be on the East Coast, you know, for the first time in his NHL career. And a guy, like you said, who's had a great career, Hall of Fame career, two Stanley Cups with the Kings, won another ring with the Golden Knights. But, you know, I know it's only a quarter of a season so far, Eddie, but really off to a great start with the Rangers.
And for Igor Shesterkin, obviously the standards are high. 8-4, he did take the loss against Buffalo that you mentioned with four goals allowed. Fair to say he's not quite up to his standards at this point?
No, he has been. I mean, it was kind of an aberration when you look at that 5-1 final score. It was 2-1 with 5 minutes left. So Buffalo had 37 shots. It wasn't Shesterkin's fault. The team had a bunch of giveaways in the first period. They were a bit sloppy. Alex Tuck scored a goal with just under 5 minutes left and made it 3-1. Then Buffalo scored an empty netter, and Oposo scored a goal with, I think, 7 seconds left. So it wasn't really what the score indicated. It was a 2-1 game late in the third period.
We're talking with Kenny Albert, who is the radio voice of the New York Rangers, also the lead TV voice for the NHL on TNT. You can see him on the NFL on Fox as well. I did want to ask you about Alexis Lafreniere. And again, being a Kings fan, I know a little bit about that 2020 draft where he went number one overall and Quinton Byfield went number two. And obviously, there's a lot of expectations on a player when you go one or two. And both guys got their careers off to a bit of a slow start. I know here in L.A., Byfield has really started to come on. And for Laferriere, he has 8 goals in 20 games this season. He's halfway to what he had last year, 16 goals in 81 games. What's been the difference this year? Or is it just sometimes younger players take a little bit of time?
I think that's a big part of it. He's still only 21, and it does take time for these younger players sometimes, you know, to get integrated into the National Hockey League with their team. The first year, it was the COVID year. He didn't play in the World Juniors. There was no training camp. So, you know, it was a bit of a rough start as far as the logistics for Alexis Lafreniere. And then the other thing is, he was the number one pick, but he was coming to a team with you know, all-stars on the left side, Chris Kreider and Artemi Panarin. So, you know, oftentimes that number one pick goes to a bad team, and they get an opportunity to play on the top line and the top power play immediately. But with Lafreniere coming to the Rangers, they won the lottery. And he's you know, more comfortable on the left side, at least over the first couple of years. So never saw much power play time, like I said. This year he's moved over to the right side, and he's been terrific. He's been on that line with Panarin and Hedl at the start, and then Trocheck, and he has the 8 goals. He's gotten a little more time on the power play, so... again, it takes time with young players. Not all of them, but Lafreniere certainly seems on the right track.
Rangers defenseman Jacob Trouba was in the news this week for a stick incident. I know you see him a lot in the highlights with big hits, but as someone who obviously sees him play a lot, it's not just like most of us who sees highlights. I was wondering, what's kind of his reputation with the team, and how important is he to the Rangers?
Oh, very important. His teammates love him. He's the captain. In my opinion, now watching him for the last 4 years in New York, he's a very clean player. Most of those hits, you know, almost all of them are clean, and he's been forced to defend himself on numerous occasions for clean hits. The incident the other day, you know, it's funny. Different videos show different things, and I know it looked worse on from one of the angles, but then another angle, you know, he does only grazed the helmet of Trent Frederick. It did not appear as if the stick hit him in the face, and he was only fined, not suspended. And Jacob said yesterday, he said, I have to do a better job of keeping control of my stick. You know, he admitted that he probably should not have swung the stick, you know, as he did. Now, there might have been other factors involved. The glove of Frederick may have lifted Trouba's arm a little bit, you know, early in the motion. But again, when you look at that second angle, it's not nearly as bad as it looked in the first, and that's probably why, you know, the NHL obviously saw all the angles, and he only came away with a fine and not a suspension. But he's a very clean player.
Obviously, as we've mentioned, it's a real good start for the Rangers, and you have to, when you're looking for things to address, sometimes you got to really nitpick, I would guess. But is there any one area that the Rangers, that you're concerned about going forward, or anything that they could clean up as we're, you know, not just looking at them being a playoff team, but a team that's a cup contender?
Well, I think at this point the only real concern would be the injured players. Hedl is back skating, so hopefully he returns to the lineup soon. And if Kako's out for an extended period, you know, then you might be a little concerned with the scoring depth on the right side. So You know, aside from that, not much. Everything's gone pretty well. I think the injuries would be the only thing to be a little concerned about at this point.
Well, obviously, as the lead play-by-play man for the NHL on TNT, you're not just watching the Rangers and seeing the Rangers, but seeing the league as a whole. Anything in general from what you've seen so far as maybe a team that you've been impressed with, or anything, any kind of comment about the league as a whole at this point?
Actually, really impressed with the Kings when I saw them a couple of weeks ago out in Vegas. The 4-1 victory that night over the Golden Knights, and they're in second place in the division, 2 points behind with three games in hand. So I'd have to say they're one of the teams that I'm certainly impressed with. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, kind of surprised about Edmonton and where they sit now at 7-12-1. They made the coaching change, so you know, that's a team that I certainly would have expected to be higher up in the standings. But overall, just really impressed with the young talent around the league and some of the guys that have really stood out this year. You know, the players seem, you know, even faster and stronger and more skilled, you know, each and every year. They work with skills coaches throughout the year and in the summers. So just a lot of fun to watch the league as a whole over the first quarter of the season.
And some big news league-wide on a former New York Ranger, of course known more as a Chicago Blackhawk, but Patrick Kane joining the Detroit Red Wings. What do you think about that move?
I'm a big Patrick Kane fan. I've really enjoyed watching him play. I got to see him up close with the Rangers for the last quarter of the season and into the playoffs last year. And, you know, it wasn't totally healthy, had the hip issue, which was well known, and went for the surgery. And happy to see him back in the league. He's one of the more exciting players of this last generation, and wish him all the best. Going to the Detroit Red Wings will certainly look a little different in that Red Wings uniform, you know, but he did spend some time in Michigan during his junior hockey days, and I know his good friend Alex DeBrincat's there. They were teammates with Chicago, so it's good for the league when a player like Patrick Kane is back doing his thing.
Well, Kenny, last time we spoke was last year, and I know you were finishing up your book, which is now finished and is out there just in time for the holidays. A Mike for All Seasons. I know you've been out on the book tour there. How's everything going with the book?
It's going great. Thanks for asking. The book was published about a month and a half ago. I started it during the pandemic when we all had a lot of time, and took about 2.5 years, the entire process. It's A Mike for All Seasons. It has its own Instagram account, which follows the travels of the book with me around North America. So you could follow it on Instagram at A Mike for All Seasons. It's really a compilation of stories about my early life growing up in a sportscasting family, getting into the business, the 2 years I spent calling minor league hockey, and then a chapter about each sport, hockey, football, basketball, baseball, the differences between radio and television, the differences between calling different sports, a chapter on the Olympics, on travel tales, on the COVID years and how we called games during that time period, a chapter paying it forward to young high school and college age sportscasters out there. You know, it's not only about sports. There's a lot about family and hard work and dedication, so you don't necessarily have to be a sports fan to read it, but if you are a sports fan and a fan of the broadcasting world, in my opinion, it's a must read, so hopefully some of your listeners can pick it up prior to the holiday season.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to checking out, and goodness knows, with all the games that you've seen and all the traveling you've done, I gotta imagine you've got some pretty good stories in there. Where are you going to be for the NFL this coming weekend?
Get to stay close to home for the second straight week. We have the Giants and Patriots Sunday. This coming Sunday, Jets and the Falcons, Rangers and Red Wings tomorrow, Wednesday night on TNT. So a couple of home games this week.
All right. Well, we look forward to always hearing you on the mic. It's a great Kenny Albert from the NHL on TNT. Radio voice of the New York Rangers, also does New York Knicks games on the MSG Network, and I mentioned the NFL off box. Kenny, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time, and look forward to talking to you again, and best of luck with the book.
Thanks, Eddie. Really appreciate it.
Time of the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. We will get to your emails in just a moment. We will remind you as well that the plus minus section of the third period will also return next week, or so we've been told by sources. We do want to thank all of our patrons on Patreon for all their support. If you'd like to join them, you can go to patreon.com/puckpodcast. We also want to say hello and thank you to our friend Dave over at Tally Custom Pocket Jerseys. TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com is where you can access Puck Podcast Team Store. Obviously, the holidays are coming up. It would make a great gift for the hockey fan in your life or a gift to yourself. We've got four styles of Puck Podcast jerseys now. There is a new Puck Podcast jersey out for the holidays. You can check that out. Multiple styles of hats. And we do have the beanie there as well. If you want to check that out, TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com. And if you are in need of a custom hockey jersey, there is no other place you should go than TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com. They can get you different styles, different colors, and create a custom logo just for you. With that, we get into the emails this week, and Doug will lead us off.
Well, actually, leading us off will be Michael in London. That's Canada, London.
London, Ontario.
It is interesting. No, London. Yeah, I guess London, Ontario. Well, London, Canada, but yes. It is interesting how many different cities in North America are based on, especially in the Northeast, are old English cities, have the same name. London, Ontario being one of them. And Michael says, "Dear Doug and Eddie, I've spent a lot of time watching hockey highlights the last few years, and for the life of me, I can't possibly come up with a reason for big hits to not show up in recaps and condensed games. I really only watch hockey and baseball, but you can always expect every type of major play to be included with baseball. But more often than not, I don't see standalone big hits involved in anything but random solo highlights. I get why you don't see the fights included often, but just seems like a damn shame that the full game isn't always on display. I wonder if the major sports sportscaster groups, put it as two words. I wonder if major sportscaster groups have a contract term that allows them to post hits and fights as solo highlights for their social media viewership. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm hoping to make a weekly question a ritual. It only feels right to spend some time lending to a show that has given me days and weeks of worth of your time to us listeners. Anyways, sticking to our current era of hockey, the transition from a heavier game, would you say that McDavid and Dreisaitl, with any of their line mates to have played with them, would take the top line status in the NHL? I was debating with a friend who believed the pure offense available from those two, playing with basically anyone else, holds more value than, say, the Boston Bruins line of Marchand, Bergeron, and Pasternak, or the argument of a line similar to the likes of when Crosby, Kunitz, and Dupuis were playing. This led to the idea that if a coach would just put them together and the organization found a devoted winger, they could turn their struggles around. And this I just absolutely cannot believe. If there's anyone I'd like to prove me wrong, though, I'd like it to be the Puck Podcast. P.S. I think your dog has managed to coach my cat to poop on beds, as I usually listen to the podcast without headphones in my home. And last week, after being accidentally closed in their room for not too long at all, a lovely surprise was found on the sheets. So, well, Kirby influencing cats, a crossing species.
How about that?
Wow. Yeah.
Well, better number two than number one. I could certainly would certainly say that. But
I will definitely say that. Let's hope it is that, and not that the sound of the Puck Podcast causes pets to lose their bowels, lose control of their bowels. Let's
that would be unfortunate. That would be unfortunate.
Yeah. So his question is, what's the top line status in the NHL? Would it be McDavid, Dreisaitl, and anybody? Or is there a line you think is individually a complete line that is better than that?
So currently or all time?
In the current era of hockey. They're not going back to 1950.
I'll be honest with you. I haven't watched a lot of Oilers games. I don't know that they are playing together, but if they were.
If they were,
absolutely. Absolutely. They played with Zach Kassian for a while and they were productive. You could throw anybody on there with them and they're the top forward group. They're two former MVPs on the same line. There's no other team that can do that.
Yeah. I'm trying to his current era, so I'm guessing active players have to be involved, and that would have to be the case.
Mentioned it: Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak. That could go toe to toe with McDavid and Dreisaitl to me, and whoever you're going to throw on there with him. But
yeah,
that's the only one I can even think of that would be somewhat comparable.
Well, now let me see. I'm trying to come up with something here just to make it interesting. I'm going to go with...
I mean, Crosby and Malkin are both active, so you could throw them. But, I mean, we're talking like in their prime, or are we talking now?
I'm saying the best line right now that I could put together would be... I'm going to go with obviously Draisaitl and McDavid is way up there with anybody. But if I'm going to give a complete line, it's going to be Matthews, Marner, Nylander. Those three guys are all elite offensive players. And you give me those three guys together, that's about as good an offensive line as you can put together in the last 5-10 years.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
So that's my counterpunch to the...
Do they ever play together? I assume they do it very rarely. I don't know.
Yeah, very rarely, because they're trying to spread the offense around, and rightfully so. But you put those three together, that's three. I mean, that's going to... The defensemen are going to be pulling a Herbie and Michael's cap and pooping themselves.
I'm going to save the NFT emails for you if that's all right.
That's fine.
Let me skip ahead to Alex. Alex is from Brisbane, Australia. And he says, hey, fellas, thanking you again for your amazing podcast. I've listened to so many of your older podcast episodes now that it feels like I've been a fan of yours for years, even though I've only been a regular since June. Well, that's awesome. I guess that's why we keep them around, right? The old episodes. He says, NHL TV, NHL.tv is back in Australia for this season, so I've managed to at least watch replays of a bunch of Golden Knights and Red Wings games. Sadly, the latest live game I watched was the Knights lose to Arizona. Man, they looked flat in that game and could not put the puck in the net. I'm coming to the States for the first time in about a week and will be there for pretty much all of December. My partner is from Vegas, so we will be spending most of our time catching up with her family and friends there, but we'll also be in LA and Colorado for a bit. I've got two games for Vegas lined up, and also going to see the Avs play the Senators in Denver. Planning on wearing my Puck Podcast jersey to see the Avs. Very nice.
Very nice.
He says, it's being shipped to my future in-laws in Vegas as we speak, so I'll try to get you a photo of me at the game. And that does remind me, I did get a text from our guy Dave. So let me go back and grab that. And I assume he's talking about Alex. But anyway, the email continues and says, I know both of you have an affinity and history with Disneyland. Oh, I saw that Disney was in the news this week with an interesting visitor. He says, we've got 2 days there. There was a naked man running around in It's a Small World this week here in Disneyland.
Well, he put himself in that area.
I guess.
Is a small world, huh?
Well, very small, I guess.
Yeah. So how'd you know he was naked then?
He says, we've got 2 days there at the beginning of the trip. What are your key recommendations? I'm thinking stuff you love and remember, not just the basics. My fiance went to college in LA and she used to be an annual pass holder, so she knows the ins and outs of the park. I figured you guys haven't steered me wrong yet, so your opinions on this matter won't hurt. Also, we're staying in Anaheim, and I will have a hire car should I go check out the pond. Go Knights, go! And that is from Alex. And again, he is in Brisbane, Australia, but soon to be coming to the United States. And yes, indeed, Dave did text me to say that Alex from Las Vegas has ordered a black Puck Podcast jersey. So we thank you, Alex, for the support. You will look wonderful in that jersey at whatever game you attend.
Yeah, let us know which style you got. I guess we'll see it when you post the picture.
Well, it's the black one, apparently. So there you go. Spoiler alert. I mean, if your fiance it was an annual pass holder, I don't know when was the last time she was at Disneyland, but I think you've got a pretty good tour guide there for your trip to the happiest place on earth. So I don't know if there's anything we can recommend.
Well, you're an active annual pass holder.
I am. I mean,
so what do you got?
I mean, I can tell you what our favorite rides are, but you're talking to Mr. Motion Sickness over here, so I wouldn't recommend.
Well, he's asking key recommendations for the whole thing. So my first recommendation, Alex, would be to not take your clothes off in It's a Small World.
That would be a good one. And you'll
bring it up on the show.
Well, I mean, it was news.
Secondly, I would say my recommendation would be to see if you can get reservations for the breakfast in the park. You go and have breakfast at the end of Main Street before the park opens. Then when the park opens, you're already at the end of Main Street. You can go and you got a head start on the mob to get to whatever rides you want to get to or lands you want to get to before the crowd. So you can get there first, get on there and get that kind of out of the way. It's also just a nice way to start the day. You get some characters coming in there, nice meal. Get Main Street when it's very empty and very private, feels very cool, very fun. So that would be my recommendation there. And I would say wherever you are, go to take the long route. definitely go through New Orleans Square and kind of look at the details, enjoy that area, looking at the details, talking to the cast members there about the area. They'll have a lot of information. Always looking at your perspective, you know, don't just walk where you're going and kind of in the mob, kind of stop and look around and look at the details that they put into everything. The lights, the pavement, the stones, the plants. There's a lot of things in Disneyland that they put details into, and it's just a matter of observing them and being and having the perspective of it. And then there's a great, you'll have to tell me, Eddie, if it's still there, but on the way to Critter Country from Adventureland, I think, is a shack off to the right that sells great clam chowder in sourdough bread bowls. That is a great place to go. And there's a nice quiet little area around there that you can go right on the Rivers of America and eat with the ducks. They'll come over because people give them bread. And that's a nice area that I always used to like to go to and relax for a few minutes with a good bowl of soup, which will be very welcome in December weather.
I mean, that's not a dish that I enjoy, but I believe I've seen people eating that. So I do believe it is still there. I would recommend, since you're there for 2 days, you can do the breakfast, like Doug said, and you can also, if you can, get a reservation at the Blue Bayou and have the Monte Cristo sandwich. If you can't get a reservation, then go to the Cafe Orleans, and it's much easier to get a place there, and you can have the same menu. It's just not the inside restaurant. It's like a kind of an outside eating area. Let's see what else. I mean, it's Christmas time, so they will have the Haunted Mansion will be the Jack Skellington version of the Haunted Mansion, the Nightmare Before Christmas. A lot of people seem to enjoy that. So I would say check that out as well.
Yep. There you go. My next email comes from Paul. He's in Kingsley, Michigan, longtime listener and contributor to the show. He says, Doug, thanks for having the folks from NHL Breakaway on last week. I had zero interest in NFTs before the interview, and I still don't, but learning about new things is always fun. I'm the same age as you, and I despise social media mostly because of all the negativity I hear about secondhand from friends and family who are active on social media. However, I am no Luddite. One of my favorite things about my job as an engineer is using and occasionally creating new technology. Something I still don't understand after thinking about NHL NFTs for a few days is why I would pay the NHL for a video clip that is available elsewhere for free. You said it yourself when you encouraged a new listener from Iowa to watch hockey YouTube videos, past and present, to become familiar with the game. Is an NHL NFT something my middle-aged social media hating brain is simply incapable of comprehending? Well, let me stop you there because he goes on, but I'll answer that question. It's the same reason you buy an album that you can listen to on YouTube or different streaming devices. It's the same reason you buy a movie Blu-ray that is available on streaming. It's the same reason you buy playing cards of players when you can look up pictures of them online. So it's because you want to collect it. One, there is a marketplace to sell if you have a rare one or something you want to you want to sell to buy others. There's that collectability and trading. And we're going to get to an email in a second that talks about the fun of the NFTs and owning them. And there are videos, but these videos are not ones you could get in this form on YouTube. I will say that. So that is my, I think it's unique enough and there's enough collectability and fun in collecting it that it is worth doing, even though you can see those videos, parts of them elsewhere. Eddie, on another topic, has the Adam Johnson accident made you start wearing a neck guard during your games? I was cut in the neck playing intramural hockey in college. Thankfully, the skate I took was pretty dull, and all I ended up with a small cut, 4 staples in my neck, and the nickname Pez, like the candy dispensers. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
I wore a neck guard after that until I lost it a few years down the road. I started playing in the league again this season, and after way too many years off, I will be getting a neck guard next time I am at the shop getting my skates sharpened. Fitting time to do it. I am interested to know if you other listeners are taking this precaution. If not, please think twice. A skate to the jugular can happen to you. Best regards, Pez in Kingsley, Michigan. That's Paul in Kingsley, Michigan. Ed, have you put on a neck guard or seen anyone in your league wearing one?
I have not put on a neck guard. I've never seen anyone in all the time I've played recreational hockey, I've never seen anyone cut by a skate blade. Now, I'm not saying it hasn't happened, and obviously it has, but I've never seen it. So it's obviously incredibly rare. We're not moving at the speeds these guys are, or, you know, the hits certainly aren't there to where you would see people's feet go head over heels.
They're also not as good on their skates as the NHL players.
True. And this, like, as he said, the skates are usually pretty dull. No one's sharpening their skates before every game. Matter of fact, I do it about once a season, to be honest with you. So no, I have not. I have not. And I don't plan on doing it, to be honest with you. So we'll see.
Going back to Alex, before you get to your next one, said he's going to be in Anaheim. And should I check out the pond? Absolutely. It's an NHL arena. It's the fourth oldest in the NHL. So it's got some history to it. And it's a rival team. I know you're a Golden Knights fan, but go see Staples Center too, if you have a chance, if there's a game going on. Go up there and see absolutely. See both. See as many NHL arenas as you can, for by all means.
Our next email comes from Jeff, and he says, "Hey, fellas, as a relatively recent transplant from the Bay Area to the UK and being fairly stuck into the hockey community here, I've heard a lot of talk about the Adam Johnson incident. I've watched the video, and as someone who has played and watched and played hockey for the last 50 years or so, I'm Eddie's age, I think it is most easily explained in the following way. Pettgrave, which is the player whose skate cut Johnson, was angling towards Johnson as Johnson was carrying the puck into the zone. Just as Johnson crossed the blue line, he cut across towards the center of the ice just as the player entering the zone came between them, mostly obstructing Pettgrave's view of Johnson. I believe it's possible that Pettgrave, realizing that he was going to miss his hit, tried to stick out his leg at the last second in an attempt to give a little piece of Johnson, or to get a little piece of Johnson, in much the same way as we've seen happen hundreds of times when a puck carrier cuts up on a defender unexpectedly and the defender reflectively sticks out his foot or his knee. The complicating factor in this case, though, was the third player coming between them. Just as Pettgrave may have extended his leg out, the third player made contact with Pettgrave's upper body, sending Pettgrave cartwheeling horizontally to the ice and flinging his skate up higher than intended in an unusual way. If the third player wasn't there, I believe Pettgrave would have likely tripped Johnson, been called for a 2-minute penalty. In my opinion, I think it's about the worst thing you can say about Pettgrave's intentions, an ill-advised hockey play that went horribly wrong. Well, now net guards are mandatory in our league, and the entire nation is sold out. Anyone have a lead on one? I'll pay top dollar or pound sterling. Still a Sharks fan, and that is Jeff. Wow, in recreational hockey, they have made it mandatory in the UK. That is interesting.
I would say let's get you in contact with Paul in Kingsley, Michigan. Paul, if you're looking to run an exporting business, you can get some neck guards to the people of the UK.
Yeah, I think the demand is higher than the production at this point. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Jeff's email continues.
Oh, is there another Jeff? There it is. There it is. Let me click over there. By the way, I do know that in youth hockey here in Southern California, the neck guards, I believe, were already mandatory. We have a friend, Will Holmes, who plays on my team. His son plays hockey. We were talking about it in the locker room a couple weeks ago. Did I click on the wrong one here? I did. I clicked on the wrong one. Sorry about that. Arantos, you're not ready to go here. P.S. In order to not end this email on such a down note, I just remembered something I meant to email in about a week or two. When you guys, Doug and Jeff, I think, were talking about all the funny one-liners one might deliver in a public restroom, it made me remember what a workmate of mine once hilariously did to me. As I am standing at the urinal doing my business, he pulls up on to the urinal right next to me, and without me knowing who he was, he paused just at the right amount of time and said simply, "Nice watch." Thanks for the great show, as always. Sorry for the above length of the email, Jeff. I'm not wearing a watch.
Yeah. That's a sundial then. Jeff and I were discussing jokes in the bathroom. It was a highbrow show that week. Our next email comes from PJ in Sydney, Australia. He says, "Hey,
PJ.
I find the world of crypto, NFTs, and the blockchain quite fascinating, so your second period interview last week was insightful regarding the NHL entering the arena. The excitement of opening the pack gained from the link provided on Facebook was quite a throwback, and I thank whoever needed to be thanked for arranging that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Hope, again, facebook.com/puckpodcast. On our Twitter account, there are links available if they are not sold out already to get your NHL breakaway pack and have the fun of opening up as PJ did. He continues, I got a multi of Brady Tkachuk with a game-tying tip and a semi-breakaway when playing the Rangers. Very cool. As well as a beauty backhand goal from Wild Bill Carlson versus Ottawa. I thoroughly enjoy the commentary-free sound with the clips and think these are great. I'll contemplate how I expand the collection, but cannot encourage enough that other listeners give it a solid look and realize the potential. Thank you very much for that, PJ. He continues saying, to Doug, I have not been to Spice Alley personally, but have heard rave reviews. Three small kids is not conducive to many nights out on the town just yet. Thank you for the top-notch show as always. And that's kind regards, PJ in Sydney, Australia. PJ, get yourself a babysitter for the night. Bring the in-laws over, somebody, aunt, uncle, and say, I'm taking the wife out for a night on the town, and we're going to Spice Alley to enjoy some delicious food in Sydney, Australia. And maybe, you know, the night will end with a fourth small kid on the way. You never know.
So the email from Arantos is involving the Corey Perry situation. And he's commenting as if he believes the rumor was true. Yep. So I think I will let Arantos rewrite his email with the current information out there if he would like to. Because I think, I don't know with 100% certainty, but it certainly appears that that rumor is just a rumor. And has no basis in fact. So
yeah, let me look up the there were some comments from like Nick Foligno, and he mentioned that the players do not know the details of what happened. So if it was something involving a teammate or their family, they would know. And he said there's a standard in this room and we all adhere to it. They, the organization, believe strongly in making sure that's understood by all of us. It's a hard day. Nobody wants to hear that news. We all care about Corey, but we understand there's a standard we're going to be held to. It's hard when you don't have all the details to comment fully, but we care about the person and we care about this organization, and they're going to do what's best for all of us. And we have to know that and understand there's a standard we all have to get to. So the players, according to Nick Foligno, do not know the details. And if the rumors were true, the players would know the details.
Well, but if it was true, would they talk about it in the media, or would they say we don't have all the facts? I mean,
it's true, but again, all you can take people at is their word.
So Arantos anyway was taking great delight in what was going on with the Blackhawks. Apparently, he's not a Blackhawks fan, and so he was enjoying what he thought was a true rumor. But I don't believe it is, and I don't think that we need to get into that email, Arantos. We thank you for your time. If you want to send an updated email, so to speak, I'm not saying you can't speak your mind. I'm not saying that we don't have free speech here on the Puck Podcast, but he's talking about how basically he was delighted to hear the news of this because he hates the Blackhawks. So I'm going to move on. Let's go to Chris. And of course I met Chris in New York recently. He is in North Belmore, Long Island. Beautiful part of the world. He says, good day, Eddie and Doug. Please give us an update on the Australian packages that each of you were keeping from each other. Did you share eventually? If you gentlemen can play nice and promise to share in the future, you guys may receive another goodie box sometime soon. Hint, hint. Otherwise, I may send you a dozen squeaky dog toys or a fornicating sandwich instead. Let us know what your current favorite Tim Tams are. Karen and Jackie, too, of course. And Doug, whether other delicious items of Australian candy you like as well. We already know that Eddie loves those caramello koala bears. They are delicious.
There's a candy bar. I think it's I'd have to look up the brand name, but it's a s'mores candy bar, and it's wonderful. It is absolutely wonderful. Daryl Ray, I think.
What?
I got to look up. It's somebody's name is the brand.
Okay.
I got to look it up. But yeah, it's fantastic. I can't get enough of those.
Dennis was another person I met in New York. Glad to meet you, Eddie, and Karen, and Dennis, and Jim the German, and Joseph and his son in New York City before the holiday gridlock started. Love the show. Thanks for bringing it to us every week, and happy holidays to all. Again, that was Chris. He says, P.S., just kidding about the squeaky dog toy and the sandwich. No, we have not shared our Australian packages. I think out of convenience, he's already got his, I already got mine. So what, why not just hold on to him? I know Doug hasn't complained and neither have I. So we thank all who sent the treats and we are enjoying them. And if you want to send future treats, let us know.
I will get Eddie his goodies before the holidays, before Christmas.
All right.
Even though he has not held up his end of the bargain, but I find it, you know, it's the season of forgiving, I guess, right?
I guess.
Greg in Bristol, Connecticut is my final email. He says, with the start of Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar this season, they have separated themselves as front runners for the Norris Trophy. However, what would it take for one of them to win the Hart Trophy? They are both currently on a 120-plus point pace. There hasn't been a season when two defensemen have scored 100 points. Why do you think the last defenseman was to win it was 2000 with Chris Pronger? Well, because the media is lazy and they just go by who scored the most points and they get a groupthink going. And once the narrative becomes, well, this player is the leading candidate for the Hart Trophy, they all kind of fall in line with that and vote that way. So, and then you got rectums like Coolius over there on Sirius XM calling people out by name for their votes after the fact. So that's going to deter people from voting what they actually think rather than going along with the group think. So there's a lot of reasons, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar. The problem is they're both doing it. So you can't rally behind one defenseman. They will split the defenseman for Hart Trophy vote if they both continue on this pace. And the forward that is in the running would then probably win the award. So we'll see how it ends up. But right now, I would say both of them, if either of them end up near 120 points and their teams are doing very well, which the Avalanche and Canucks look like they will, there's going to be strong candidacy for both of them to be in the Hart Trophy conversation. Absolutely. And the Norris Trophy is going to be one of the most competitive races we've seen in many years between those two.
All right, our final email comes from Hart. He is in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. And he says, gentlemen, I hope you're both well. I was surprised to see talented Sabres rookie Zach Benson score his first career goal because I thought he already had it. Turns out those were in the preseason, and his points this regular season were all assists. And what a first career goal it was. No exaggerations will be required for the grandkids one day down the road. It wasn't the best first career goal I've ever seen. I'd have to go with Jordan Eberle or Tyler Bozak for that designation. But his between-the-legs dangle was pretty special. I'm extremely confused by Jonathan Quick's career with the past few years. In L.A., it looked like he was done. His short stint in Columbus, he was merely a contract. Vegas seemed to consider him their sixth goaltender at best. And I'm not sure they would have put him in ahead of those guys who sell popcorn during the games.
Well, now, he's not wrong there. There was a depth chart at the end of the postseason run where, you know, they have all the listed healthy scratches. And they had Jean-Claude Van Damme from Sudden Death listed ahead of Jonathan Quick in the depth chart.
Well, that's understandable if you ever saw him play goal.
Yeah.
He says, now Quick is winning games and shutting out superstars again. What do you make of this? Why was Vegas so sure he was done? And how on earth did the Rangers realize he had more in the tank after multiple teams emphatically gave up on the 37-year-old? Can you recall an aged goalie rebounding so strongly after so many years without a solid season? Warm regards, Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. We talked about it a little bit, obviously.
We did not read your email first,
no, Hart.
So you're on the same page because we talked about this, obviously, in the first period.
I cannot recall off the top of my head another goalie who was at one time great, seemed to be ready for retirement, and then suddenly found the magic again. But I'm guessing there's somebody out there who would fit that bill.
I'm looking at the one that came to mind, and I looked him up to see. Grant Fuhr. Grant Fuhr was with the Oilers forever, obviously incredibly successful, went to Toronto, was not very good, went to Buffalo, was not very good, went to the Kings, was not very good, then went to the St. Louis Blues after literally like 5 years of being not very good all around the league, and was a Vezina, was sixth in the Vezina, was sixth in the Hart Trophy, was nice. An all-star.
Nice.
And got the Lady Bing, or was 13th in Lady Bing. So that would be my example of a guy that had been left for dead on the scrap heap as a journeyman and came back and had an amazing season. After that, he went back to being just average to not very good to round out his career and finally finished it up with Calgary. But that would be the guy that would be the example.
All right. Not bad. Not bad at all.
How about that, huh? Pulling that out of my
sometimes I surprise even myself.
Yep. Lucid Doug is always a good contributor.
I think that wraps up the emails.
It does indeed.
There you go. Thank you to all who took the time to send us an email. Appreciate it.
Yes.
If you'd like to send us an email for next week's show, the email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. We are on social media.
My question for the week.
Oh, there's a question for the week. Is this a new segment?
No, but just something occurred to me to write people to get people to write in.
Oh, all right.
Without knowing the details of what happened, would you want Corey Perry added to your favorite team? Feedback.
I'll answer. Should I answer that or should I wait?
I know you don't because you hate him anyway. Yeah. But there were no circumstances I would ever welcome Dustin Brown in a Ducks jersey as either. So it makes sense. But I'm talking to the other 30 teams that may or may not want a veteran goal scorer and obviously coming with some baggage though now. So that's the question. Would you want Corey Perry added to your NHL team's roster? Feedback@puckpodcast.com.
Okay. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast. We're on Twitter or X. I still am not calling it X, but anyway, @puckpodcast. And of course, if you want to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. We thank the very busy and talented Kenny Albert for giving us some time on the show. That guy is unbelievable with all the stuff he does. Incredible. And all at a high level. We are humbled that he would join us on the show. Anyway, that'll do it for this week's show. For my co-host, Doug Stolhan, I'm Eddie Garcia. Thank you as always for listening. And we will talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.